I close my eyes and do my best to imagine I'm simply sitting up on his bed right now, the way I have been for the last hour. I'll bring my suitcase. You bring that old map. We can live by the book, or we can never go back. Feeling the breeze never felt so right. We'll watch the stars until they fade into light. We can have everything we ever wanted, and just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. He finishes the last chord, but doesn't move. His hands remain stilled on his guitar. His ear remains firmly pressed against my chest. My breaths are heavier now that I've just sung an entire song, and his head rises with each intake of air. He sighs a deep sigh, then lifts his head and rolls onto his back without making eye contact with me. We lie in silence for a few minutes. I'm not sure why he's being so unresponsive, but I'm too nervous to make any sudden movements. His arm is still underneath me, and he's making no effort to remove it, so I'm not even sure if he's finished with this little experiment yet. I'm also not sure I'd even be able to move. Sydney, 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 what are you doing? I absolutely, positively do not want to be having this reaction right now. It's been a week since I broke up with Hunter. The very last thing I want, or even need, is to develop a crush on this guy. However, I'm thinking that may have happened before this week. Crap. I tilt my head and look at him. He's watching me, but I can't tell what his face is trying to convey. If I had to guess, I'd say he's thinking, "Oh, hey, Sydney, our mouths sure are close together. Let's do them a favor and close this gap." His eyes drop to my mouth, and I'm incredibly impressed with my telepathic abilities. His full lips are slightly parted as he quietly takes in several slow, deep breaths. I can actually hear him breathing, which surprises me, because that's another of his sounds that he keeps complete and total control over. I like that he can't seem to control it right now. As much as I claim to want to be unattached from guys and independent and strong, the only thing I'm thinking is how much I wish he would take complete and total control over me. I want him to dominate this situation by rolling on top of me and forcing that incredible mouth onto mine, rendering me completely dependent on him for breath. My phone receives a text, interrupting my clearly overactive imagination. Ridge closes his eyes and turns to face the opposite direction. I sigh, knowing he didn't even hear the text, so turning away was of his own accord. Which means I'm feeling pretty awkward right now for just having that rich internal dialogue sweep through my mind. I reach behind my head and feel around until I find my phone. "Hunter, are you ready to talk yet?" I roll my eyes. Way to ruin the moment, Hunter. I was hoping that after days of avoiding his texts and phone calls, he would finally get a clue. I shake my head and text him back. "Me, your behavior is bordering on harassment. Stop contacting me. We're done."
Ridge. "Stop with the guilt trip, Ridge. You didn't do anything wrong. You aren't doing anything wrong. Your heart is beating like this simply because you've never felt anyone sing before. It was overwhelming. You had a normal reaction to an overwhelming event. That's all." My eyes are still closed, and my arm is still underneath her. I should move it, but I'm still trying to recover. And I really want to hear another song. This might be making her uncomfortable, but I have to get her to push through her discomfort because I can't think of any other situation where I'll be able to do this. "Me, can I play another one?" She's holding her phone, texting someone who's not me. I wonder if she's texting Hunter, but I don't peek at her phone as much as I want to. "Sydney. Okay. The first one didn't do anything for you?" I laugh. I think it did a little too much, in more ways than I'd like to admit. I'm almost positive it was also obvious to her by the end of the song, with the way I was pressed against her. But feeling her voice and what it was doing to all the other parts of me was way more important than what she was doing to me. Me. I've never listened to anyone like that before. It was incredible. I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, you were here, and you were the one singing, so I guess you don't really need me to describe it. But I don't know. I wish you could have felt that. Sydney. You're welcome, I guess. I'm not really doing anything profound here. Me. I've always wanted to feel someone sing one of my songs, but it would be a little awkward doing this with one of the guys in the band. Know what I mean? She laughs, then nods. Me. I'll play the one we practiced last night, and then I want to play this last one again. Are you okay? If you're tired of singing, just tell me. Sydney. I'm good. She lays down her phone, and I reposition myself against her chest. My entire body is battling itself. My left brain is telling me this is somehow wrong. My right brain is wanting to hear her sing again. My stomach is nowhere to be found. And my heart is punching itself in the face with one arm and hugging itself with the other. I might never have this opportunity again, so I wrap my arm over her and begin playing. I close my eyes and search for the beat of her heart, which has slowed down some since the first song. The vibration of her voice meets my cheek, and I swear my heart flinches. She feels the way I imagined a voice would feel during a song, but multiplied by 1,000. I focus on how her voice blends with the vibration of the guitar, and I'm in complete awe. I want to feel the range of her voice, but it's hard without using my hands to feel it. I pull my hand away from the guitar and stop playing. Just like that, she stops singing. I shake my head no and motion a circle in the air with my finger, wanting her to keep singing even though I'm no longer playing the chords. Her voice picks back up, and I keep my ear pressed firmly to her chest while I lay my palm flat against her stomach. Her muscles clench beneath my hand, but she doesn't stop singing. I can feel her voice everywhere. I can feel it in my head, in my chest, against my hand. I relax against her and listen to the sound of a voice for the very first time. I wrap my arm around Maggie's waist and pull her in closer. I can feel her struggling beneath me, so I pull her even tighter. I'm not ready for her to go home yet. Her hand smacks my forehead, and she's lifting me off her chest as she attempts to wiggle out from beneath me. I roll onto my back to let her off the bed, but instead she's slapping my cheeks. I open my eyes and look up to see Sydney hovering over me. Her mouth is moving, but my vision is too fogged over to see what she's trying to say. Not to mention that the strobe light isn't helping. Wait, I don't have a strobe light. I sit straight up on the bed. Sydney hands me my phone and begins to text me, but my phone is dead. Did we fall asleep? The lights are going on and off. I grab Sydney's phone out of her hand and check the time. 8:15 a.m. I also read the text you just tried to send me. Sydney, someone's at your bedroom door. Warren wouldn't be up this early on a Friday. It's his day off. Friday. Maggie. Shit. I hurriedly jump off the bed and grab Sydney's wrist, then swing her to her feet. She looks shocked that I'm panicking, but she needs to get the hell back to her room. I open the bathroom door and motion for her to take that route. She walks into the bathroom, then turns and heads back into my bedroom. I grab her by the shoulders and force her back into the bathroom. She slaps my hands away and points into my bedroom. I want my phone, she says, pointing toward my bed. I retrieve her phone, but before I hand it to her, I type a text on it. Me. I'm sorry, but I think that's Maggie. You can't be in here or she'll get the wrong idea. I hand her the phone and she reads the text, then looks back up at me. Who's Maggie? Who's Maggie? How the hell can she not remember? Oh. Is it possible I've never mentioned Maggie to her before? I grab her phone again. Me. My girlfriend. She looks at the text, and her jaw tightens. She slowly brings her eyes back to mine, and she snatches the phone out of my hand, grabs the doorknob, and steps back into the bathroom. The door closes in my face. so was not expecting that reaction. But I don't have time to respond because my light is still flickering. I head straight to the bedroom door and unlock it, then open it. Warren is standing in the doorway with his arm pressed against the frame. There's no sign of Maggie. My panic instantly subsides as I walk backward and fall onto my bed. That could have been ugly. I glance up at Warren because he's obviously here for something. "Why aren't you answering my texts?" he signs from the doorway. "My phone died." I reach over to my phone and place it on the charging base on the nightstand. "But you never let your phone die." "First time for everything," I sign. He nods his head, but it's an annoying, suspicious, you're hiding something kind of nod. Or maybe I'm just being paranoid. "You're hiding something," he signs. Or maybe I'm not being paranoid. "And I just checked Sydney's room." He arches a suspicious brow. "She wasn't in there." I glance to the bathroom, then look back at Warren, wondering if I should even lie about it. All we did was fall asleep. "I know, she was in here." He holds his stern expression. "All night?" I nod casually. "We were working on lyrics, I guess we fell asleep." He's acting strange. If I didn't know him better, I'd think he was jealous. Wait, I do know him better. He is jealous. "Does this bother you, Warren?" He shrugs and signs back. "Yeah, a little." "Why? You spend almost every night in Bridget's bed." He shakes his head. "It's not that." "What is it, then?" He breaks his gaze, and I can see the discomfort cross his face before he exhales. He makes the sign that indicates Maggie's name. He brings his eyes back to mine. "You can't do this, Ridge. You made this choice for yourself years ago, and I tried to tell you then what I thought about it. But you're in it now. And if I have to be the annoying friend to remind you of that, so be it." I wince, because it kind of pisses me off how he's referring to my and Maggie's relationship. Don't refer to my relationship with Maggie as being in it ever again. His expression grows apologetic. "You know what I mean, Ridge." I stand and walk toward him. "How long have we been best friends?" He shrugs. "That's all I am to you? A best friend? Ridge, I thought we were so much more than that." He smirks as if he's trying to be funny, but I don't laugh. When he sees how much his remarks have bothered me, his expression quickly sobers. 10 years. 10 years. "You know me better than that, Warren." He nods, but his face is still full of doubt. "Goodbye," I sign. "Shut the door on your way out." I turn and walk back to my bed, and when I face the door again, he's gone.
Chapter 8. Sydney. Why am I so pissed? We didn't do anything. Did we? I can't even tell what the hell happened last night before we fell asleep. Technically, it wasn't anything, but then again it was, which is probably why I'm so pissed, because I'm so freaking confused. First, he doesn't tell me about Hunter for 2 solid weeks. Then, he fails to mention that he's deaf. Although, I really have no right to be upset about that. That's not something I should feel obligated to have been told. But Maggie? Girlfriend? How could he fail to mention in the 3 weeks I've been talking to him that he has a girlfriend? He's just like Hunter. He is a dick and 2 balls and no heart, and that makes him Hunter's twin. I should probably just start calling him Hunter. I should just call them all Hunter. From here on out, all men shall be referred to as Hunter. My father should be thanking the high heavens that I'm not in law school, because I am by far the absolute worst judge of character who has ever walked the planet. Ridge. False alarm. It was just Warren. Sorry about that. Me. Screw. You. Ridge. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Me. Don't even. A few seconds pass with me staring at my silent phone, and then a knock comes from the bathroom. Ridge swings the door open and enters my room, holding his hands with his palms up in the air as if he has no idea why I'm upset. I laugh, but it isn't a happy laugh at all. Me. This conversation will require a laptop. I have a lot to say. I open my computer as he makes his way back to his room. I give him a minute to log on, then I open our chat. Ridge. Can you please explain why you're so pissed? Me. Let me count the ways. Number one, you have a girlfriend. Number two, you have a girlfriend. Number three, why, if you have a girlfriend, was I even in your bedroom? Number four, you have a girlfriend. Ridge. I have a girlfriend. Yes. And you were in my room because we agreed to work on lyrics together. I don't recall anything happening between us last night to warrant this reaction from you. Or am I mistaken? Me. Ridge, it's been 3 weeks. I've known you for 3 weeks now, and you've never once mentioned that you have a girlfriend. And speaking of Maggie, does she even know I moved in? Ridge. Yes, I tell her everything. Look, it wasn't an intentional omission, I swear. You and I have just never had a conversation where she came up. Me. Okay, I'll let it go that you failed to mention her, but I'm not about to let everything else slide. Ridge. And this is where I'm confused, because I'm not clear on what you think we did. Me. You're such a guy. Ridge. Ouch, I guess. Me. Can you honestly say that your reaction to the possibility of her being at your door earlier was a normal, innocent reaction? You were freaking out that she would see me with you, which means you were doing something you wouldn't want her to see. I know all we did was fall asleep, but what about the way we fell asleep? Do you think she would have been okay with the fact that you had your arms around me all night and your face was practically glued to my chest? And not only that, but what about the fact that I sat between your legs the other night? Would she have smiled and kissed you hello if she had walked in right then? I doubt it. I'm fairly certain that would have ended with me being punched. Ugh, why is this upsetting me so much? I bang my head lightly against the headboard out of frustration. Moments later, Ridge appears in the doorway between our bathroom and my bedroom. He's chewing on the corner of his bottom lip. His features are a lot calmer than when he was in here just a few minutes ago. He walks slowly into my room, then sits on the edge of my bed with his laptop on his knees. Ridge, I'm sorry. Me. Yeah, good, whatever, go away. Ridge. Really, Sydney, I haven't been looking at it like that at all. The last thing I want is for things to be weird between us. I like you. I have fun with you. But if for one second I led you to believe that something was going to happen between us, I am so, so sorry. I sigh and attempt to blink the tears away. Me. I'm not upset because I thought something was going to happen between us, Ridge. I don't want anything to happen between us. I haven't even been single for a whole week yet. I'm upset because I feel like there was a moment, or maybe two, when, as much as neither of us wants to cross the line, we almost did. And you can deal with your actions on your own, but the fact that I was unaware that you had a girlfriend was really unfair to me. I feel like... I lean my head back against the headboard and squeeze my eyes shut, long enough to force back the tears once more. Ridge, you feel like what? Me. I feel like you almost made me a Tory. I absolutely would have kissed you last night, and the fact that I didn't know you were involved with someone would have made me a Tory. I don't want to be a Tory, Ridge. I can't tell you how much their betrayal hurts me, and I will never, ever do that to another girl. So that's why I'm upset. I don't even know Maggie, yet you made me feel like I've already betrayed her. And as innocent as you may be, I'm blaming you for that one. Ridge finishes reading my message, then calmly lies back on the bed. He brings his palms to his forehead and inhales a deep breath. We both remain still as we think about the situation. After several quiet minutes, he sits back up. Ridge, I don't even know what to say right now, other than, I'm sorry. You're right. Even though I thought you knew about Maggie, I can absolutely see what you're saying. But I also need you to know that I would never do something like that to her. Granted, what happened between us last night is not something I would ever want Maggie to see, but that's mostly because Maggie doesn't understand the process of writing music. It's a very intimate thing, and because I can't hear, I do have to use my hands or my ears to understand things that come naturally to others. That's all it was. I wasn't trying to cause anything to happen between us. I was just curious. I was intrigued. And I was wrong. Me. I understand. I never thought for a second that your intentions weren't genuine when you asked me to sing for you. Everything just happened so fast earlier, and I was still trying to recover from the fact that I woke up in your bed and the lights were flickering. Then you go and flash the word girlfriend in my face. It's a lot to process. And I believe you when you say you thought I knew about her. Ridge, thank you. Me, just promise me one thing. Promise me you will never be a Hunter, and I will never, ever be a Tory. Ridge, I promise. And that's impossible because we're so much more talented than they are. He glances up and smiles his smiley smile at me, which makes me automatically smile in return. Me. Now get out of here. I'm going back to sleep because someone spent the whole night drooling on my boobs and snoring way too loud. Ridge laughs, but before he leaves, he messages me one last time. Ridge, I'm excited for you to meet her. I really think you'll like her. He closes his laptop, stands, and walks back to his room. I close my laptop and pull the covers over my head. I hate that my heart is wishing so bad that he didn't have a girlfriend. No, she already moved in, Bridget says. Her cell phone is propped up on her shoulder, and from the sound of it, she just broke the news to her sister that I've taken the empty bedroom. Bridget completely ignores that I'm even in the same room with her and continues talking about me. I know the fact that I haven't clarified that I'm not deaf is a little mean, but who is she to assume I can't read lips? I don't know. She's a friend of Ridge's. I should have ignored him when he asked if I would go in the rain, mind you, and bring her up to the apartment. Apparently her boyfriend dumped her and she had nowhere else to go. She pulls a seat out at the bar and sits with her back facing me. She laughs at something the person on the other end of the line says. Tell me about it. He seems to enjoy taking in strays, doesn't he? I grip the remote in my hand and hold it tightly in an attempt to keep from hurling it at the back of her head. I told you not to ask about Warren, she says with a sigh. You know he irritates the hell out of me, but I just can't stay away. Wait, did I just hear that correctly? Might Bridget have feelings? She's lucky I like Warren, or the remote would be greeting her pretty little head right now. She's also lucky someone is knocking at the door loudly enough to distract me from hurting her. Bridget stands up and turns to face me, pointing at the front door. Someone's at the door. Rather than answer it, she walks to her bedroom and closes her door. So hospitable, that one. I stand and make my way to the front door, knowing it's more than likely Maggie. I place my hand on the doorknob and inhale a steady breath. Here we go. I open the door, and standing in front of me is one of the most beautiful women I've ever laid eyes on. Her hair is straight and jet black, and it falls around two naturally tan shoulders. Her face is smiling. Her whole entire face is beaming. She's nothing but a face full of beautiful white teeth, and they're smiling at me, and it's making me smile back, even though I really don't want to. I was really hoping she was ugly. I don't know why. Sydney, she says. It's just one word, but I can tell by her voice that she's deaf, like Ridge. But unlike Ridge, she speaks, and she enunciates really well. You must be the girlfriend, I say with feigned excitement. Is it feigned? Maybe not. Her entire demeanor is making me feel sunny and happy, and maybe I am a tiny bit excited to meet her. Weird. She steps forward and gives me a hug. I close the door behind us, and she slips off her shoes and heads to the refrigerator. Ridge has told me a lot about you, she says as she pops open a soda, then walks to the cabinet for a glass. I think it's great that you're helping him through his writer's block. Poor guy has been stressing for months now. She fills her cup with ice and soda. So how are you fitting in? I see you've survived Bridget, and Warren has to be a pain in the ass. She looks at me expectantly, but I'm still loving the fact that she's so pleasant, likable, cheerful. I smile back at her and lean against the counter. I'm trying to figure out exactly how to respond to her. She's speaking to me as if she can hear me, so I reply the same way. I like it, I say. I've never lived with this many people before, so it's taking some getting used to. She smiles and tucks a lock of her hair behind her ear. Ugh, even her ears are pretty. Good, she says. Ridge told me about your shitty birthday last weekend and how he took you out for cake, but it didn't make up for you never having the chance to celebrate. I have to be honest. It bothers me that he told her he took me out for cake. It bothers me because maybe he's right and he does tell her everything. And it also bothers me because he seems to tell me nothing. Not that I've earned that right from him. God, I hate feelings. Or I hate my conscience. The two are constantly at war, and I'm not sure which one I'd rather turn off. So, she says, we're going out tonight to celebrate. I pause. We? She nods. Yeah. Me, you, Ridge, Warren, if he's not too busy. We can invite Bridget, but that's laughable. She walks past me toward Ridge's bedroom, then turns to face me again. Can you be ready in an hour? I shrug. Okay. She opens Ridge's bedroom door and slips inside. I stand frozen, listening. Why am I listening? I hear Maggie giggling behind the closed door, and it makes me wince. Oh, yay. This should be fun.
Ridge. Are you sure you don't want to stay in tonight? Maggie shakes her head. That poor girl needs to have some fun with the week she's had, and I've been so overwhelmed with my internship and the T-word. I need a night out. She leans forward and kisses me on the chin. Do you want to get a cab so you can drink, or do you want to drive? She knows I won't drink around her. I don't know why she always tries her reverse psychology on me. Nice try, I sign. I'll drive. She laughs. I have to change and get ready. We're leaving in an hour. She tries to slide off me, but I grip her waist and roll her onto her back. I know for a fact that it never takes her more than half an hour to get ready. That leaves a good 30 minutes. Allow me to help you out of your clothes, then. I pull her shirt off over her head, and my eyes drop to the very thin, intricately laced bra she has on. I grin. Is this new? She nods and smiles her sexy smile. I bought it for you. Front clasp, just how you like it. I pinch the clasp and undo it. Thank you. I can't wait to try it on. She laughs and slaps my arm. I take off her bra, then lower myself on top of her and drop my mouth to hers. I spend the next half hour reminding myself how much I've missed her. I remind myself how much I love her. I remind myself how good it feels when we're together. I keep reminding myself over and over because for the past week, it felt as if I was starting to forget. Me. Be ready in 30 minutes. We're going out. Warren. I don't want to go. Have an early shift tomorrow. No. He has to go. I can't go out with Maggie and Sydney by myself. Me. No, you're going. Be ready in 30 minutes. Warren. No, I'm not. Have fun. Me. You're going. 30. Warren. Not going. Me. Going. Warren. Not. Me. Yes. Warren. No. Me. Please. You owe me. Warren. What the hell do I owe you for? Me. Let's see, about a year's worth of rent, for one? Warren. Low blow, man. Fine. Thank God. I don't know what Sydney gets like when she drinks, but if she's a lightweight like Maggie is, I don't think I can handle the two of them on my own. I walk to the kitchen, and Maggie is at the sink, pulling out the bottle of Pine Sol. She holds it up to ask if I want any, and I shake my head. Figured I'd save money if I downed a couple of shots here first. You think Sydney wants any? I shrug but pull out my phone to ask her. Me. You want a shot before we go? Sydney. No, thank you. Not sure if I feel like drinking tonight, but you go right ahead. She doesn't want any. I sign to Maggie. Warren walks out of his bedroom and sees Maggie pouring a shot from the Pine Sol container. Shit. There goes the hiding spot. He doesn't even blink when he sees her filling her shot glass. Make it two, he says to her. If Ridge is forcing me to go out tonight, I'm getting so wasted he'll regret it. I cock my head. How long have you known that wasn't cleaning solution? He shrugs. You're deaf, Ridge. You would be surprised how many times I'm behind you and you don't even know it. He picks up the shot Maggie poured, and they both turn their attention to something behind me. Their shocked expressions forced me to turn around and see what they're looking at. Oh, wow. I shouldn't have turned around. Sydney is walking out of her bedroom, but I'm not sure if it's really Sydney. This girl isn't wearing baggy shirts or walking around with her hair pulled up and a naked face. This girl is wearing a strapless black dress that's anything but simple. Her blonde hair is down and thick, and I'm thinking it probably smells as incredible as it looks. She smiles past me and says thanks to either Maggie or Warren, one of whom more than likely just told her how great she looks. She's smiling at them, but then she holds her hands up and yells, "No!" just as a mist of liquid rains down on me from behind. I spin around, and Warren and Maggie are both coughing and spitting into the sink. Warren is sipping straight from the faucet, making a face that says he didn't enjoy whatever just went down his throat. What the hell? Maggie says, scrunching up her face and wiping her mouth. Sydney runs into the kitchen with her hand over her mouth. She's shaking her head, trying not to laugh, but she looks apologetic at the same time. I'm sorry, she keeps saying over and over. What the hell just happened? Warren composes himself, then turns to Sydney. He speaks and signs at the same time, which I appreciate. He can't know how isolating it feels when you're in a group of people who hear, but no matter what, he always signs when I'm in the room with him. Did we actually just almost drink an entire shot of Pine Sol? He's eyeing Sydney hard. She answers him, and he signs her response for my benefit. She says, you two weren't supposed to drink it. It was supposed to be Ridge. And no, I didn't actually put Pine Sol in there, idiot. I'm not trying to kill the guy. It was apple juice and vinegar. She tried to prank me. And she failed. I start laughing and text her. Me. Nice try. That was a valiant effort, although it backfired. She flips me off. I look at Maggie. Luckily, she's laughing about it. There is no way I could live here, she says. She walks to the refrigerator and pulls out the milk and makes herself and Warren a quick drink to wash away the aftertaste. Let's go, Warren says after he downs the milk and tosses his cup into the sink. Ridge is driving because I won't be able to walk in 3 hours.
Chapter 9. Sydney. I have no idea where we're going, but I'm doing my best to appear engaged. I'm in the back seat with Warren, and he's talking to me about the band, explaining his involvement in it. I ask the appropriate questions and nod at the appropriate moments, but my mind isn't here at all. I know I can't expect the hurt and heartache to go away this quickly, but today has been the worst day so far since my actual birthday. I realize that all the pain I've been feeling hasn't been quite as bad because I've had Ridge this week. I don't know if it's the way he brings comedic relief when he's around, or if it's because I really was developing a crush on him, but the times I've spent with him were the only times I felt remotely happy. They were the only times I wasn't thinking about what Hunter and Tori did to me. But now, watching him in the front seat with his hand clasping Maggie's, I don't like it. I don't like how his thumb occasionally sweeps back and forth. I don't like the way she looks at him. I especially don't like the way he looks at her. I didn't like how he slipped his fingers through hers when we reached the bottom of the apartment stairs. I didn't like how he opened her door, then placed his hand on her lower back while she climbed inside the car. I didn't like how they had a silent conversation while he was putting the car in reverse. I didn't like how he laughed at whatever she said, and then pulled her to him so he could kiss her forehead. I don't like how all of these things make me feel as though the only good moments I've had since last week are now over. Nothing has changed. Nothing significant happened between the two of us, and I know we'll continue with the way things have been. We'll still write lyrics together. He might still listen to me sing. We'll still continue to interact the way we've done since I met him, so this situation shouldn't be bothering me. I know in my heart that I didn't want anything to happen with him, especially at this point in my life. I know I need to be on my own. I want to be on my own. But I also know that the reason I'm feeling so conflicted by this entire situation is that I did have a little hope. Although I wasn't ready for anything right now, I thought the possibility would be there. I assumed that maybe someday, when I was ready, things could have developed between us. However, now that Maggie is in the picture, I realize there can't be a maybe someday between us. There will never be a maybe someday. He loves her, and she obviously loves him, and I can't blame them because whatever they have is beautiful. The way they look at each other and interact and obviously care about each other is something I didn't realize was missing between Hunter and me. Maybe someday I'll have that, but it won't be with Ridge. And knowing that diminishes whatever ray of hope shone through the storm of my week. Jesus, I'm so depressed. I hate Hunter. I really hate Tori. And right now, I'm so pathetically miserable, I even hate myself. Are you crying? Warren asks. No. He nods. Yes, you are. You're crying. I shake my head. I am not. You were about to, he says, looking at me sympathetically. He puts his arm around my shoulder and pulls me against him. Chin up, little girl. Maybe tonight we can find someone who will screw the thought of that jerk-off ex right out of that pretty little head of yours. I laugh and slap him in the chest. I would volunteer to do it, but Bridget doesn't like to share, he says. She's kind of a bitch like that, if you haven't noticed. I laugh again, but when my eyes meet Ridge's in the rearview mirror, my smile fades. His jaw is firm and his eyes lock with mine for a few seconds before he refocuses on the road in front of him. He's unreadable most of the time, but I could swear I saw a small flash of jealousy behind those eyes. And I don't like how seeing him jealous that I'm leaning against Warren actually feels good. Turning 22 has rotted my soul. Who am I, and why am I having these awful reactions? We pull into the parking lot of a club. I've been here a few times with Tori, so I'm relieved that it won't be completely unfamiliar. Warren takes my hand and helps me out of the car, then puts an arm around my shoulders and walks with me toward the entrance.
"I'll make you a deal," he says. "I'll keep my hands off you tonight so guys won't assume you're madly in love with me. I hate cock blockers and I refuse to be one. But if anyone makes you uncomfortable, just look at me and give me a signal so I can swoop in and pull you out of the situation."
I nod. Sounds like a plan. What kind of signal do I give you?
I don't know. You can lick your lips seductively, maybe squeeze your breasts together.
I elbow him in the side. Or maybe I can just scratch my nose. He shrugs.
That works too, I guess.
He opens the door and we all make our way inside. The music is overwhelming, and the second the doors close behind us, Warren leans in to shout into my ear.
There are usually booths open on the balcony level. Let's go there.
He tightens his grip on my hand, then turns to Ridge and Maggie, and motions for them to follow. I haven't had to use the secret code Warren and I agreed on, and we've been here more than 2 hours now. I've danced with several people, but as soon as the song ends, I make it a point to smile politely and head back to the booth. Warren and Maggie seem to have made a nice dent in the liquor stock, but Ridge hasn't had a drop. Other than a shot Warren persuaded me to take when we first arrived, I haven't had anything to drink either.
"My feet hurt," I say.
Maggie and Ridge have danced a couple of times, but that was to slow songs, so I make it a point not to watch them.
"No," Warren says, attempting to pull me back up. "I want to dance."
I shake my head. He's drunk and loud, and every time I try to dance with him, he ends up butchering my feet almost as badly as he butchers the moves.
"I'll dance with you," Maggie says to him.
She climbs over Ridge in the booth, and Warren takes her hand. They head down to the lower level to dance, and it's the first time Ridge and I have been alone in the booth.
"I don't like it."
"I like it."
"I don't."
"I do."
See? Rotten soul. Corrupted, rotten soul.
Ridge.
"Having fun?"
I'm not really, but I nod because I don't want to be that annoying, broken-hearted girl who wants everyone around her to feel how miserable she is.
Ridge. "I need to say something, and I may be way off base here, but I'm attempting to improve on how I unintentionally omit things from you."
I look up at him and nod again.
Ridge. "Warren is in love with Bridget."
I read his text twice. Why would he need to say that to me? Unless he thinks I like Warren.
Ridge. "He's always been a flirt, so I just wanted to clear that up. I don't want to see you get hurt again, that's all."
Me. "Appreciate your concern, but it's unnecessary. Really, have no interest there."
He smiles.
Me. "You were right. I like Maggie."
Ridge. "I knew you would. Everyone likes Maggie. She's very likable."
I lift my eyes and look around when a Sounds of Cedar song begins to play. I scoot to the back of the booth and look over the railing. Warren and Maggie are standing by the DJ's table, and Warren is interacting with the DJ while Maggie dances around next to him.
Me.
"They're playing one of your songs."
Ridge. "Yeah, that always happens when Warren's around. Are they playing Getaway?"
Me. "Yeah, how'd you know?" Ridge presses a flat palm to his chest and smiles.
Me.
"Wow, you can differentiate your songs like that?" He nods.
Me.
"What's Maggie's story? She communicates really well. She seems to dance really well. Does she have a different level of hearing loss from yours?"
Ridge. "Yes, she has mild hearing loss.
She hears most things with hearing aids, which is why she also speaks so well. And she does dance well. I stick to slow songs when she wants me to dance with her, since I can't hear them.
Me. Is that why Maggie speaks out loud and you don't? Because she can hear?
His eyes swing up to mine for a few seconds, and then he looks back at his phone.
Ridge. No, I could speak if I wanted to.
I should stop. I know he's probably annoyed by these questions, but I'm too curious.
Me. Why don't you then?
He shrugs but doesn't text me back.
Me.
No, I want to know. There has to be a reason. It seems like it would make things a lot easier for you.
Ridge. I just don't. I get along fine with how I do things now.
Me. Yes, especially when Maggie and Warren are around. Why would you need to talk when they can do it for you? I hit send before I realize I probably shouldn't have said that. I have noticed Maggie and Warren do a lot of his talking for him, though. They've ordered for him every time the waitress has come by the booth, and I've noticed Warren do it several times this week in different situations.
Ridge reads my text, then looks back up at me. It seems I made him uncomfortable, and I immediately regret saying what I did.
Me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean for that to come out how it probably sounded. I just meant you seem to let them do things for you that they wouldn't necessarily have to do if you would speak for yourself. My explanation seems to bother him even more than the initial text. I feel as if I'm digging myself a hole.
Me. Sorry. I'll stop. It's not my place to judge your situation, because I obviously can't put myself in your shoes. I was just trying to understand.
He looks at me and pulls the corner of his bottom lip into his mouth. I've noticed he does this when he's thinking hard about something. The way he continues to stare at me makes my throat go dry. I break his gaze, pull the straw into my mouth, and take a sip of my soda. When I look back at him, he's texting again.
Ridge. I was 9 when I stopped verbalizing.
His text does more to my stomach than his stare did. I don't know why.
Me. You used to talk? Why did you stop?
Ridge. It might take me a while to text the explanation.
Me. It's fine. You can tell me about it at home when we have our laptops.
He scoots to the edge of the booth and peers over the balcony. I follow his gaze down to Maggie and Warren, who are still both hovering around the DJ booth. When he sees that they're still occupied, he moves away from the railing and leans forward across the table, resting his elbows in front of him as he begins to text.
Ridge. They don't look like they're ready to leave, so I guess we have time now. Brennan and I didn't luck out in the parent department. They both had issues with addiction. They might still have them, but we wouldn't know because we haven't spoken to either of them in years. My mother spent most of our childhood in bed, doped up on pain pills. Our father spent most of our childhood in bars. When I was 5, I was enrolled in a school for the deaf. That's where I learned sign language. I would come home and teach Brennan because neither of my parents knew ASL. I taught him because I was 5 years old and had never had a conversation with anyone before. I was so desperate to communicate, I was forcing my 2-year-old brother to learn signs like cookie and window, just so I would have someone to talk to.
My heart sinks to my stomach. I look up at him, but he's still texting.
Ridge, imagine walking into your first day of school to the realization that there is actually a way to communicate. When I saw kids having conversations with their hands, I was amazed. I lived the first 5 years of my life never knowing what it was like to communicate. The school began teaching me how to form words using my voice, how to read, how to sign. I spent the next few years practicing everything I learned on Brennan. He became just as fluent in ASL as I was. I wanted him to know it,
but I also didn't want to use him as my way to communicate with my parents. So, when I would talk to them, I would always speak my words. I couldn't hear my own voice, of course, and I know it sounds different when deaf people speak, but I wanted a way to communicate with them since they didn't know ASL. One day, when I was talking to my father, he told Brennan to tell me to shut up, then had Brennan speak for me. I didn't understand why, but he was angry. Every time I would try to talk to my father after that, the same thing would happen, and he would tell Brennan to tell me to stop voicing my words. Brennan would translate what my father wanted him to say back to me. I finally realized my father didn't want me to talk because he didn't like the way my voice sounded. It embarrassed him that I couldn't hear. He didn't like for me to speak when we were in public because people would know I was deaf, so he would tell me to shut up every time I did it. One day at home, he became so angry that I was still doing it that he started yelling at Brennan. He assumed that since I continued speaking my words, Brennan wasn't relaying the fact that he didn't want me to speak. He was really drunk that day and took his anger too far, which wasn't uncommon. But he hit Brennan so hard upside the head it knocked him out. Tears begin to well in my eyes, and I have to inhale a calming breath. Ridge. He was only 6 years old, Sydney. 6. I never wanted to give my father another reason to hit him, so that was the last day I ever spoke out loud. I guess it just became habit after that. He lays his phone on the table and folds his arms in front of him. He doesn't seem to be waiting for a response from me. He may not even want one. He watches me, and I know he sees the tears falling down my cheeks, but he doesn't react to them. I take a deep breath, then reach over and pick up a napkin and wipe my eyes. I wish he wouldn't see me responding like this, but I can't hold it back. He smiles softly and begins to reach across the table for my hand, and then Warren and Maggie reappear at the booth. Ridge pulls his hand back and looks up at them. Maggie's arms are draped across Warren's shoulders, and she's laughing at nothing in particular. Warren keeps trying to grab the back of the booth. It looks as if he's about to need support too, but he can't seem to grasp anything. Ridge and I both stand up and assist them. Ridge pulls Maggie off Warren, and I wrap Warren's arm around my shoulders. He presses his forehead to mine.
Sid, I'm so happy you got cheated on. I'm so happy you moved in.
I laugh and push his face away from mine. Ridge nods his head toward the exit, and I nod in agreement. Another drink and we would probably have to carry these two out.
I like that dress you wear, Sid, that blue one, but please don't wear it again.
Warren is leaning his head against mine as we make our way toward the stairs.
I don't like your ass in it because I think I might love Bridget, and your dress makes me love your ass.
Wow, he's really drunk if he's admitting that he might love Bridget. I already told you I was burning that dress, I say, laughing.
Good, he says with a sigh.
We reach the exit, and I notice Ridge is carrying Maggie now. Her arms are draped around his neck, and her eyes are closed. Once we reach the car, she opens her eyes as Ridge tries to stand her up. She attempts to take a step, but ends up stumbling. Ridge opens the back door, and she practically falls inside. He scoots her to the other side of the seat, and she falls against the door, closing her eyes again. Ridge steps out of the way and motions for Warren to climb in. Warren steps forward and reaches up to Ridge's face. He pats Ridge's cheek and says,
I feel bad for you, buddy. I bet it's really hard not to kiss Sydney, because it's hard for me and I don't even like her like you do.
Warren climbs inside the car and falls against Maggie. I'm thankful that he was too drunk to sign any of that, because I know that Ridge didn't understand what he said. I can tell by the confused look Ridge is giving me. He laughs and bends down, lifting Warren's leg, which is still hanging out of the car. He pushes it inside the car and closes the door, and my mind is still stuck on Warren's words. Ridge reaches in front of me and pulls on the handle of the front passenger door, then opens it. I step forward, but the second Ridge's hand rests against my lower back, I pause. I glance up at him, and he's looking straight down at me. His hand remains on my lower back as I force myself to slowly close the gap between myself and the car. The second I begin to lower myself into the seat, his hand slips away and he waits until I'm all the way inside the car, then closes the door. I lean my head back into the seat and close my eyes, terrified of what that simple gesture just did to me. I hear him take his position behind the wheel, and the car cranks, but I continue to keep my eyes closed. I don't want to look at him. I don't want to feel what I feel when I look at him. I don't like how every minute I spend with him, I feel more and more like a Tory. My phone receives a text, so I'm forced to open my eyes. Ridge is holding his phone, watching me. Ridge,
she doesn't do this a lot. Probably not even 3 times a year. She's been under a lot of stress lately, and she likes to go out. It helps.
Me, I wasn't judging her.
Ridge, I know. I just wanted you to know she's not a raging alcoholic like I am.
He winks at me, and I laugh. I glance into the back seat, where Warren is draped across Maggie. They're both out cold. I turn back around in my seat and text him again.
Me, thank you for telling me all that earlier. You didn't have to, and I know you probably didn't want to, but thank you.
He gives me a sideways glance, then returns his attention to his phone.
Ridge, I've never told anyone that story. Not even Brennan. He was probably too young to even remember it.
He sets his phone down and puts the car in reverse, then begins to back out. Why is it that the only question I wish I could ask him right now is the most inappropriate one? I want to ask him if he's ever told Maggie, but his answer shouldn't matter to me. It shouldn't matter at all. But it does. He begins to drive, and he reaches down and turns on the radio, which confuses me. He can't hear it, so I don't understand why he would care if it was on or off. But then, I realize he didn't do it for himself. He turned it on for me.
Ridge. After stopping at a drive-thru for food, we pull up to the apartment complex. I put the car in park. Me. Take the food up and unlock the door while I wake them up. She picks up our 2 drinks and the bag of food. She heads up to the apartment, and I walk to the back door and open it. I shake Warren awake and help him out of the car. Then I wake Maggie up and help her out. She's still too out of it to walk, so I pick her up and shut the door behind me. I make sure Warren walks ahead of me up the stairs because I'm not positive he won't fall down them. When we make it inside, Warren stumbles to his bedroom, and I walk Maggie into my room. I lay her on the bed and take off her shoes, then her clothes. I pull the covers over her, then head back into the dining room where Sydney has laid out our food. It's almost midnight, and we haven't eaten since lunch. I take a seat in front of her. Me. So now that you know one of my deep, dark secrets, I want to know one of yours. We both have our phones out on the table while we eat. She smiles and begins to text me back. Sydney. You have more than one deep, dark secret? Me. We're talking about you right now. If we're going to be working together, I need to know what I'm getting myself into. Tell me about your family. Any raging alcoholics? Sydney. No, just raging assholes. My father is a lawyer, and he hates that I'm not going to law school. My mother stays home. She's never worked a day in her life. She's a great mom, but she's also one of those perfect moms, you know? Think Leave It to Beaver meets Stepford Wives. Me. Siblings? Sydney. Nope, only child. Me. I wouldn't have pegged you as an only child, nor would I have guessed you were a lawyer's daughter. Sydney, why? Because I'm not pretentious.